The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 8th of May, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Aidan Bishop, founder of Big Dish, at D-I-S-H, and Aidan discusses their operational update, which reveals further progress on their growth strategy of expanding across the UK. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about the following companies: Volga Gas, i3 Energy, MTI Wireless Edge, and we also have a chat about Bidstack. Also on the podcast, Darren Sinden, market analyst at Pepperstone Limited, talks about the following topics: trade wars, US-Iran relations, hedge funds being the shortest they've ever been of volatility, and Uber floating on the stock market in the US tomorrow. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, plus a range of other content. And by the way, listen, if you use the app, the Vox Markets app, for free, and you get some use from it, some value from it, please do spend a few minutes of your time, if you could, going to the Apple Store, the Android Store, whatever, and giving us a decent rating. That way, more people will find the app, and more people will use it, and we can get better feedback and make it better for the user. Thanks for that.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Aidan Bishop, founder of Big Dish. And the ticker there is Dish, D-I-S-H. Aidan, thanks for joining me.
You're welcome.
Now, you've had some decent news now, and you've got an operational update, and you're rolling out your app there at quite a pace. It's quite impressive, actually, and we'll go into the details of this, as always. But before we do, Aidan, if someone's just tuned in, maybe investing, looking to invest for the first time in some company or doing some research and not heard about you before, how would you explain the concept of Big Dish to them?
That's very simple, Justin. We're a tech platform, and we connect diners with restaurants. So what that means is restaurants put onto our platform their excess inventory, typically in quieter off-peak periods, and each table or each seat that they put onto our platform has a discount of 25% or 50% attached to it. So that means Big Dish users know that whenever they come onto the platform, every single seat they're going to book has a discount associated with it. Dine smarter is what we call it.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now Sanj Nahar is your CEO. He's ex of TripAdvisor, and he's got a lot of experience in this industry. And announced today that quite exciting things. So you're rolling out slowly. You're going across different territories. Of course, you're testing in certain areas. Now you're starting to roll out and expand across the country. And so just remind us sort of where you are and where you've announced you're rolling out to, if you could, Aidan.
Well, we started off in Bath. We did a test back towards the beginning of the year, end of last year. Bournemouth, of course. We're also in Bristol. We're in Southampton. We're in Exeter. We're in Basingstoke. Those two went live last week. And we've announced today that we're becoming, around the end of this month, we'll be in Brighton, we'll be in Taunton, we'll be in Swindon, and we'll be in Winchester. And also we're starting to set our sights on the commuter towns of around London. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is all building up, of course, to a national rollout. We're kind of entering a period, I think, at Big Dish, in terms of our sort of maximum engagement with the market, where there's just going to be very frequent updates around expansion and the progression as our footprint enlarges around the UK.
Yeah, I like that, this line, you're setting your sights on London commuter towns. It's almost like you are slowly engulfing UK, parts of the UK, and creeping up on big capital there. So what's the kind of feedback you had so far from restaurants and from people using it? Has it been good?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's been very good. I mean, users love Big Dish. I mean, it's great. We've got some people that use us very, very frequently. Of course, who doesn't love a deal when you go to a restaurant? And the key, of course, is to have a good selection of restaurants. And that's what we're striving to do at Big Dish and continuing to ensure that there's a good variety, good cuisine choices, good types of restaurants. And yeah, so it's been good so far.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Someone approached me on Twitter and mentioned Big Dish, and then they talked about Taste Card, and I said, "Well, I wouldn't go for that. I wouldn't go for Taste Card. Is a subscription model, isn't it? We have to pay up front, and regardless of whether you go to a restaurant or not, they're going to charge you." And I thought, I don't want that. I want to save money. So
No sense. I mean, that's yesterday's sort of news. People pulling out loyalty cards, vouchers, and newspaper clippings. This is all yesterday. Yeah. I mean, what Big Dish is about? We're a tech platform. Data-driven, consumer-friendly, and this is where the world is going. You know, I think in 5 years' time, who in the world is going to pull out a loyalty, a discount card or a loyalty card or a voucher from their wallet? I don't think anybody is. Mm-hmm. It's the world is going towards what we're doing.
Well, exactly. I mean, and this is in regards to anything. I think, like you say, credit cards and even Absolutely. Cash. You know, I just want it all on my phone. Like, I carry my phone with me all the time. I don't really want another wallet. In my one pocket's for my phone, my wallet. I want to get rid of the wallet, really. I've got the phone, it's fine. And you're right there. And it's it's a no-brainer for the consumer and for the restaurant. And one thing I've had an investor approach me, said, I don't understand the financials here. How do they stack up? So what is the price you're charging? And I understand it's not pretty much the model, is he looking to disrupt? Is that the case? So take us through that.
I think first and foremost, anybody that invests into tech, particularly early stage tech like ourselves, you know, what are you investing into? First of all, you're investing into engagement, into footprint. That is the primary reason why you invest into early stage tech. And a lot of early stage tech companies make the mistake of worrying, I've got to get the money in now. That's not the goal. The goal is to get a fantastic user experience, because on the basis of that, or the foundation of that, then you're going to increase your engagement. You're going to increase your footprint. The revenues will come as a result of that. We make money at the moment simply by charging restaurants a fee. And via the Big Dish app, we get paid for. That is the first revenue stream. However, there are a number, many more, that are going to come. We've got all of that in our sights, in our roadmap, in our plan. So we're not worried about that. Our focus is on the user experience, our focuses on the platform, or focuses on the footprint. So that's what we're doing.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, there's like I said, there's lots of advertising. People will pay, won't they, to get a bit of prime real estate on that app, I assume, because that's what happens in like I say, your Rightmove and all those kind of things. But that's what happens, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's opportunities to monetize the physical real estate within the app. We could do that. There's opportunities to all kinds of opportunities to monetize. Even, for example, when a user books a table, they get a confirmation within the app, on an email, on an SMS. We could also monetize that if we wanted to. We have experimented with that before, where we did it with a radio station actually once in Asia, and they were promoting us and for free, and as a result we put on a little tag around the radio station in the SMS confirmation. That could be monetized. There's a number of things. We've also got our product development. We're not stopping just at the product that we've got now. There's other products that coming in line within Big Dish, and you know, they'll take some time to develop, but there's a number of monetization opportunities that will become apparent to the company.
Yeah, cool, excellent stuff. All right, if someone's listening to this right now, I'd like to sound on what you're doing. As always, given those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, if you're a UK listener and you like a deal, you enjoy dining out, Big Dish is coming to an area near you at some point soon. So follow us and watch the journey.
Excellent stuff. And I've got to say, I always say this because I've got to remind you, this is a major filter for me. When I'm looking at companies I invest in, I look at whether the owners, the founders, the CEO has skin in the game. And you do, don't you?
Yeah, no, I'm the largest shareholder of the company. So, yeah.
So you want it to work.
Absolutely.
Marvellous stuff. Aidan, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. You're Al.
Very good, thanks, Jess. Great bank holiday weekend. Worked off the drinking and eating of the first part of the weekend in the garden yesterday. Lots of excavating and digging and stuff, so I feel very fit. Plus, I also jumped on the motorbike and I rode along to the Hastings May Day run, where some 43,000 bikers gathered.
Really? Why are they gathering? What are they doing?
It's frankly, it's just a big excuse for a ride out. And of course, Hastings Seafront is renowned for its great seafood joints, fish and chips shops, and all the rest of it. It was pretty cloudy, but it was just the entire town was taken over by bikers, so it was quite something.
And do you actually get off and chat to each other or not? Or just
that's the great thing. There's, you know, apart from the odd over enthusiastic biker, planting his bike into a lamppost or whatever. Everyone's very friendly, you get off and chat to people, and obviously, there are lots of people have older bikes. I have a few classic bikes that I sometimes ride along to these events, and it's just great fun. It's just you can pick up useful contacts. You get
contacts for what? What do you
well,
like?
Well, in particular with the older bikes, when you're restoring stuff, some parts are rarely available. So and you can come across some really skilled old engineers too, and if you've got a particular problem that needs fixing, or you need something built from scratch, then you can often just bump into people. But it's just the whole biking thing, really.
I went to see of the bank holiday. Went to see the Avengers Endgame, which is of course the most successful film ever in box office takings. It took over 1.2 billion apparently in the first weekend. It's 3 hours long. My son's a bit too young, really, but it's a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. And my 6-year-old, after 10 minutes, said, "This is boring." Fell asleep for an hour and a half. And he woke up. He woke up at the right time, just when he was getting, the action has really happened at the end. And he sort of woke up. In fact, he woke up about half an hour before the action, and he said, "Is this nearly finished?" And he'd been asleep for an hour and a half. I don't know. But then it started heating up a bit then, and I thought, it's okay. I just think, do people buy into the hype? It's all right. It's a bit of a mismatch, a bit messy.
Yeah. I mean, the special effects are great, and obviously it's a cinematic experience. So if you go to one of these big screens where you put the 3D glass on, it's all very good. And I know
but
we
you know
did
what
that
though, it's too, what I didn't like about it, it's the second weekend it's opened, and it was full still. That was getting my nerves. I had someone next to me. I didn't want them next to me. Quite a big lady who wouldn't stop eating. She's saying, "Get lost." I like it when you go to cinema and there's no one else there. I know it's not commercially viable for cinema for the companies to have that, but I mean, I love that, when that happens. But when it's just jam-packed, you've got someone to your right and someone to your left, it's annoying, there we are. But I wouldn't recommend it unless you're a bigger... it was okay. So I'm sure I've seen better Marvel, films than that. I'm sure I have.
Well, it's all about the experience of going to the cinema too. I mean, in Lewes and East Sussex, there's the Depot Cinema, which is built from the former depot from Harvey's Brewery. It was built a couple of years ago. And it's great. You can go there. It's a small cinema, but you can walk in. We saw the film Vice, which is fantastic. It's about the vice president Dick Cheney from a few years ago, and how it's just a terrific film. But you can go in there, glass of wine, and you can sit there in comfort, plenty of room. Doesn't matter if someone's next to you. There's so much room in the seat, and that's what it's all about. Going to these bigger cinemas where everyone's just rammed in there. Not my idea of fun at all. No.
That's it. Got a glass of wine until they say, "Oi, take your wine out."
No.
I'm only kidding. I'm joking. I'm joking. Now. It's the same with every man's cinema. Isn't it? You go and have a few glasses of wine.
That's what it's about. That's what
cool.
It's about,
All right. That would probably helped yesterday, but I was driving, so I couldn't do that. Probably helped, sort of make the time go quicker. Let's get into stocks anyway, because I suppose that's what we're chatting about. So, first one up, what are you talking about?
Okay, first one up, Volga Gas, V-Gas. Now, this is a company that has four exploration and production oil and gas licenses in the Volgograd and Saratov regions in Russia. And it had an eye on the stock. It was flagged up by a chap called Baron Day Trading, who's a big... well on Twitter, you know, and this guy does find good stuff. And it was kind of on my radar, and I did a bit of digging around. Market cap is currently 65 million. Shares have been as high as just over £1, down to 46p, currently trading at 81.5, 82p. The company has Russian operating subsidiaries, PGK and GNS. Probable and proven gas reserves are 26 million barrels of oil equivalent. That's 11 million barrels of oil and 77.6 billion cubic feet of natural gas, and some liquid petroleum gas in there too. Four projects in those regions: Dobrynskaya, Vostochny, Marikovsky, Karpensky, and Urals.
Are you speaking Russian? That's really impressive.
Yes, of course. I'm speaking Russian here. I'm trying to anyway. So the company has a good record of production. From January to March, production was well up in the previous year, just over 6,100 barrels of oil per day. Fell in April due to the plant being shut down wells being shut down for maintenance for 5 days. Also, very poor weather conditions, which hampered some of the towing and throwing to the wells. 4,900 barrels of oil per day for April, but overall management are expecting just under 6,000 barrels of oil per day production on average for the rest of the year. 2018 revenues grew by 24% to 45.9 billion. So that's against the market cap of 65 million. What really attracted me to the stock was the dividend yield, which is around 12% at the moment. Whether, of course, that is sustainable is another matter altogether. But simply for an oil and gas company that's producing on the level this company is producing at, the quality of the projects it's engaged in. They just bought their new Dobrynskaya gas plant on stream. That's the liquid petroleum gas, so we can expect a ramp up in production there. But the final dividend on top of the 6 cent dividend from the interim dividend last year was just under 10 cents up from 6 cents in the previous year. So the dividend yield has massively increased, and of course that's still on a fairly modest rating, with shares sort of trading sort of somewhere in the mid-range for the year. So the outlook's very strong. The chief exec, Andrei Zozulia, has given or issued a very sort of bullish outlook for the current year. So if production continues as it's projected to at the moment, then the company has a very good year in prospect. And, you know, we're clearly, with a yield like this, there's an opportunity, obviously not without risk, but for capital gain and also for a very strong yield as well.
Mm-hmm. Vegas. Yes. Look at the chart. It's gone up recently, isn't it? From 50 pence to almost a quid. And it's come back down to 80 pence. But it's rallied strongly, isn't it?
It's rallied very strongly indeed. So there's a period of consolidation now, but clearly with the plant coming on stream and production at that level, despite the hiccup in April, and clearly it's going to fluctuate. You know, you're not going to get a perfect round number every single month, but that's a very strong performance from this company. And yes, shares have had an incredible year. You know, so it was trading at less than 50p in February, and of course here we are now at nearly double that, but it's still on the yield of 11.7% even at this level. So so going forward, you know, this is this looks very attractive from capital growth potential and also dividend yield potential. If you're getting nearly 12% back over the next year from your investment, then what's not to like?
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. What's next, Al?
Okay, spoken about this company on a number of occasions. i3 Energy mm-hmm. is the name of the company. Now, of course, i3 Energy has two key oil prospects in the North Sea, which are the Liberator, two Liberator prospects. That's the Liberator the two Liberator prospects. Basically, I'm looking for the names here. Liberator West and Liberator Phase 2. And it's also expanded its reach into the Serenity prospect, which is adjacent to it. Now, company was formed in 2014. The field is adjacent to another an oil field that's already producing in the North Sea. So what attracted me to this in the first place was that it's in oil and gas terms, it's almost a plug and play opportunity. The CEO, of course, is Neil Carson, ex Ithaca Energy. So he's got a very good track record. Sorry, no, it's Majid Shafiq.
Neil's stepped down and sits to the side. Hasn't he gone to the side somewhere? No, where's he gone? Anyway.
Neil stepped down. Yeah, Majid Shafiq. So of course the issue for here has been developing the infrastructure and of course getting in place the funding to start the drilling into Liberator West. The company has contracted, announced on April 9th, it's contracted Borgland Dolphin drilling contractors, and drilling is expected to commence between the 5th of July and the 15th of August. And indeed, once the results from that are seen, then the company can move forward and develop the next phase. In regard to funding, the company raised a decent sum of money early this year, so it's well positioned for funding. It also has a junior facility in place to partially finance drilling this year, and a senior facility which is under negotiation to fund the company all the way through to the first oil from the Liberator field, which is expected in 2020. That placing, of course, took place at 37p. Shares have, if you've been invested, I do hold these shares, and I've been invested. I invested in the company at 22p. I also took some profits at £1.27. So it's been a very good investment for me. But I now believe at this level, because the stock is trading, just over the placing price at 38.5p. At this level, it offers great value. The other investors have the risk at this level, and it's a question of getting all the ducks in a row. We'll see the drilling results in the middle of this year, and then we can go forward from there. There is, in terms of the potential in the fields, there's something like 500 million barrels of oil between the Liberator and Serenity prospects. So the pre-tax NPV is something like $2.5 billion for Liberator Phase 1 and 2, with additional valuation probably in the region of $1 billion for Serenity. So huge potential here. It's already well on the way to getting this drilled. Brokers are following the stock too. Canaccord have a buy rating and a £1.90 price target on the stock against the current 38p. So really, at this point, it looks to me like it offers very good value. You've got a great team in place, and you've got a huge oil field in prospect, which we'll find out more about in July. And of course, this is, as I said right at the start, it's adjacent to an oil field that's already producing, the Blake oil field, which is already producing, and it's almost in oil and gas terms a plug and play prospect.
Yeah, look at the share price there, right? You can draw a line and know where it is at the moment. That's how strong that support level is. Bouncing off that 38 pence level, you know, so it's come down from a big rise. But yeah, I'm looking at their presentation development. Liberator Phase 1 drilling expected to be summer, mid-2020 at circa 20,000 barrels of oil per day. Robust economics of $602 million. NPV or pre-tax NPV is 367, post-taxes at 65 Brent. And then you've got the growth high impact summit appraisal program. So Liberator. So 511 million barrels standard tank oil in place. And they're valued. What's the thing at the moment? Is it like about
market cap is 33.8 million at the moment. So yeah, I mean, okay. we're There's huge potential here, and I think, you know, we've got an oil and gas junior here that's well on the way to becoming a key producer of oil and gas in 2020. If you were going to look at any oil and gas prospect, this is the field overlaps with a field that's already producing, and that's what attracted to me the stock in the first place, and also the caliber of management as well, the people who are involved in the company, and really, it's all about now getting in place that final tranche of funding to see the company through to production.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. All right, what's next?
Okay, we spoke about this company previously as well. MTI Wireless Edge is the name of the company. MWE is the epic code. Mm-hmm. Now, things are starting to happen for this company. When we spoke about them last year, the shares were ticking along at 17, 18p, 20p, and since then the company has started to move forward. Two divisions: MTI Systems, which is military antennas, defense contracts with antennas and so on, and also the other division is Motec Water, which is a wireless water management and irrigation system, which is used in remote regions. And since the start of the year, the company completed a merger with an associated company to clear up the confusion and uncertainty over the volume of shares that the company was represented by. That's now been done. The post-merger, the full year figures, revenues rose 35% to $35 million. Operating profits up 82% to just under $3 million. And earnings per share 14% to 2.7 cents. Now, currently, the company has a valuation of $22 million. So to my mind, it's almost trading at a discount to its to revenues. There seems to be no premium in the share price for future revenue growth. But here we are, since the start of the year, the company has signed a $900,000 contract with Jinat India, a $1.5 million tether balloon contract win, another $1 million military antenna contract win, and a $3 million win for Motec Water in China. So that's $6.5 million dollars worth of contracts signed just in the first quarter of the year. The company is also engaged in a share repurchase scheme, and it has a dividend yield of 4.4%. Shares are traded as high as 30p on the year, as low as 16.5p. Currently trading at 26p, and as you'll see, really the number of contract wins and the growth in revenues is now reflected by an increase in the share price. But even so, you can argue that the company is still at $22 million, very undervalued compared to the cash it's already generating and the revenues that it's generating. And also, it seems to me that there's still nothing factored in for future contract wins. So, yeah, MTI Wireless Edge, MWE.
MWE, marvellous stuff. And cool. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, just to say that, of course, we were talking about BidStack. We've a lot of chat about that over the past few weeks. BidStack, of course,
I had him on the podcast. Did you hear him on the podcast yesterday?
I've been sort of I haven't been able to sort of listen to that yet, just but okay, I'll
forward you the link out, because
I do follow YouTube channel, so I do see the stuff pop up, it's a question of actually having the time to, and I've just not had the time this weekend. However, BidStack raised a big lump of cash at 12.5p, so they're now fully funded. 6 million, I believe, was the figure, wasn't it? So,
five and thing, but they've got 6 million in cash now. Yes. So, but you know what? It's funny. On AIM, I'd say probably 70% drops. You know, of AIM's companies will not go on to do anything, because a lot of them are resource companies, and the odds are against them, and you know, they won't get to a mine, or they won't get to oil, and so there's other sort of lifestyle companies, and these companies, you know, do fundraising because they have to. You know, they keep the lights on. And there's a difference between the fundraising, you know, for growth purposes and fundraising just to keep going. And BIDS has got a phenomenal potential ahead of it. I do believe it's one, it could be one of the most exciting stocks around ever on AIM. And so they've got, you know, gaming is getting more exciting, it's growing fast, it's a massive industry already. And, you know, they raised money here. And it did, it, you know, someone did put a spanner in the works by a blogger mentioning, and that's another thing, is another story altogether. But I think, you know, when companies are fundraising, they should be suspended just to stop that slippage in the price and to spoil the whole thing. But because this would have been raised a lot higher if it wasn't down to people, you know, sort of grasping up the thing. But or being inside, breaking the rules, essentially. They're breaking the inside rules. Someone was breaking the rules there. So anyway, but I just genuinely think this now removes any uncertainty whatsoever, because they were going to get to the end of the year, they're going to be profitable anyway, they said. But obviously, to get there, they probably need a bit of cash. But this now removes any uncertainty that they need funds. It will accelerate their growth, give them better opportunities. Already, they, you know, they've got a lot of people around them that are very influential in the world of gaming and advertising. And these people aren't joining BidStack for the money, you know. They know BidStack's a small startup company, and these guys come from big companies, so they can genuinely see the potential here, and they're offering advice, and they've got options, that's all. But, you know, I think this, the news flow will start happening now. In the next 6 months, we've only just started the journey. I just genuinely think, if you think the news flow has been good so far, I think you wait. I think it'll just get bigger and better, and I see it. Like I said, I've mentioned this several times, but I think it'd be a multiples of where it is now in about 12 months' time, you know?
Well, I agree. I mean, I'm Peterhouse, the broker, which suggests revenue growth up to 20 million, you know, which is on a PE of 10, that's basically 80 million market cap. And of course, here we are at a 28 million market cap. Money's raised, as you rightly say, it was, you know, there is a problem with fundraisings getting flagged up in the marketplace before they happen, people breaking the rules and information getting out. And I think BidStack dealt with that pretty well. But actually, if you look at the price activity since the raising was announced, I mean, it was trading at 14p, I think, yesterday. You know, so that's 2p ahead of the raise price, and you know, it just shows the strength and the appetite for this stock.
Let's forget, Al. It's IPO'd around about 5p, you know, 5 or 6p it was. It's 6p. So that new fundraise is 100% higher than the IPO raise. Now, yeah, it's been up to 21p, so it's come back. But there are so many companies, CEOs, who would love to be in the position where they could do a fundraise just after coming into market 100% higher than their fundraise at the start, indeed. You know? So, it's gone. But the momentum in the stock is massive. And do you know what? I whinge about the blogger and stuff, but I did top up, and I took advantage of the big drop, and I bought some more shares. And I think in 12 months' time, we'll look back on this and think that was a cracking opportunity.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's like i3 Energy I mentioned just now. So they got a fundraising way at 37p, you know, which is they raised 16 million at 37p. So again, they're funded. You know, the shares are trading now around that level. So if you're in at a recent placing price or thereabouts, really, you know, you're there for the ride along with the big investors, and that's the exciting thing. And I think that's where BidStack is. You know, the broker is already projecting exponential growth, but I think since the advisory committee has stepped up, you know, for Spotify and Trade Desk and the other major players, you know, there is so much potential in terms of the expertise that the company has tapped into to help it grow and to help it deliver, you know, what could be truly. It could be the sky's the limit for this company in regard to revenue potential, because gaming is absolutely huge. It's bigger than the many, many TV channels put together. And
it's bigger than the movie. And if you think about it, look at my last video there. I did a couple of graphs. And it's bigger than movies and TV together. It's bigger than for teenagers. It's bigger than Instagram, any kind of any Facebook, any social media. It's bigger than all that. And esports is exploding as well. Esports, where they've got an interest in as well, is exploding. They're big brands now realizing, hang on, there are more people, you know, watching esports, just about catching up now, than real sports. It's an actual sport. We know people. It's competitive gaming, and so it's. And if you saw on the weekend, Gfinity, which is also listed, has we were holding, I think, one of the big games finals there at their arena. and it was, the atmosphere was phenomenal, you know, shouting for the teams, and it was just like a genuine local derby, you know, so it has got that passion amongst it, and that will drive it high as well. But it's so many facets to gaming that is dynamic, and it's moving quickly, and it's very exciting, I think. And so, yeah, I think just at the start here, and technology, like I said, Google's come out now with their Stadia offering, which you don't need consoles anymore, and it's good that they're going to the streaming model, which I think makes it more exciting to me. You don't have to, you know, buy that upfront sort of massive console for a couple of £100, whatever it is, or £500 before you get started. You can just go straight in there, you know. So, and that, I think a lot of that will be, you know, paid for by advertising and subscription. Well, you know, it's like the old Spotify model, and that'll lend nicely towards Bidstack's model as well. So,
well, it will. There's no company, in my opinion, better position for exponential growth than Bidstack is right now.
I believe that too. My portfolio is skewed towards that thought, because I look at all my other stocks. I like all my other stocks, but I think just for blue sky potential, they can scale up with very little. I mean, once they've got new team to bulk up their technical team, they've got an advisory panel, but once they've got their tech, you know, on the DSPs and in publishers' games, it's there. It's just generating cash 24 hours a day. It's like there's a scale up. It's quite easy, you know, and just can go everywhere globally. So anyway, that's Bidstack. You probably see, you can probably take from what I'm saying, I do hold a bit of stock.
Yeah, indeed. I will be joining on this now, because I've waited until I waited for the fundraising. I now know where it's at, so I'm going to be jumping in. I've got a buy order in there, so I'm going to pick up stock as close to the raise price as possible. I'm hoping it's going to dip sometime during the day or possibly tomorrow, but we will see.
I did say in my video last time before it was even the placing price was announced that you will not get anywhere near the placing price. You know, I think so. At the moment, I think scaling, you may have a few dips, a little tiny dips, but not towards that placing price. I think it's too much demand for it. But this is the time. Like I said, all you get, you know, money's there now. What's going to happen now? All you're going to have now is good news from what they're doing. You're not going to have anything else that's going to worry investors. So it's a good time to sort of, you know, put your toe in there, Al, I think, at least, you know. Maybe your ankle, up to your ankle, maybe go.
Up to my boots, okay, yeah.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Al, and we'll speak you next week.
Thanks, Justin. Speak next week. Cheers.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Darren Sinden, market analyst at Pepperstone. You all right, Darren?
Yeah, not too bad, Justin. Weather aside, I can't complain at all, sir.
Yes, it's flipped, isn't it? And it's almost like it's following the mood of the stock market, a bit gloomy because of it's all down. Big sell-off, is it? Just on a tweet from Trump, pretty much, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had obviously the long weekend here in the UK, and then and the goalposts moved quite quickly. And it's a very good analogy, actually, with the weather in the markets. Donald Trump suggesting that he was fed up with the pace of negotiations over trade with China, and that he was going to institute a further 15% tariff on about $200 billion worth of Chinese imports into the US, and that those changes would take effect as of this Friday afternoon. At one stage, it looked like the Chinese might boycott the next leg of trade talks completely. I understand that the Chinese delegation is travelling to the US now, and that their senior trade negotiator is including in the party. But nonetheless, if you look at the language after Trump's tweets and some of the comments that were made, it's hard to see anything other than quite a sharp cooling of relations. And I know, you know, Donald Trump likes to think of himself as the ace deal maker, and he likes a bit of brinkmanship, but it would be quite ironic, wouldn't it, really, if 6 months of hard graft went out of the window over that, and a few, you know, choice comments from Robert Lighthizer, who's the US chief negotiator. He said that, as far as he was concerned, the Chinese had reneged on earlier agreements. So some quite strong language there. And of course, the markets have reacted, in the way you'd expect. They've sold off, and, you know, concerns about trade have reappeared. And I just, you know, it's just occurred to me over the last couple of days, really, that risk could be coming back on the table.
Well, I don't know. I tweeted out yesterday, and literally the US, indices, and the three of them, S&P, the Nasdaq, Dow, are all up. And the only thing in the all down. I mean, all in the red. The only thing in the green was the VIX. It was spiking up. It was up 36% or something ridiculous. But risky. But I find that odd, though. I mean, I do think it's a bit of brinkmanship and a bit of trade negotiations, from his part. Don't you? I think it's within. It benefits everyone, not just them too. So I think the playing a hard game, actually going down that route, will not help him at all if he's going for a second election. I think a lot of people will suffer in America, won't they?
No, he won't. And I mean, and he made you do question whether he does know what he's talking about. There was another tweet out yesterday where he said that that the Chinese will pay the extra tariffs. Well, of course, that's not true at all, is it? The person or the group of people that pay the extra tariffs, if they come in, will be US consumers, be they businesses importing raw materials or components, or end consumers, buying finished goods, that originated in China. And in fact, if you've experienced the best part of a 30% pay rise, not pay rise, 30% rise in the cost of a product, you're probably going to steer away from it. So that might be the end result that he's looking for Chinese exports to the US to diminish. But so many goods that sold in America now have some kind of Chinese component to them. Mm-hmm. I always use the example of the iPhone.
Yeah.
Is it really a US product or is it really a Chinese product? Because it's effectively assembled in China and packaged in China from a multitude of components, many of which are sourced in China and elsewhere in Southeast Asia, and then boxed up and pushed off to Apple and distributed around the world. But when it's sold in America, is it, an Apple product made in California, or is it in fact an Apple import from China? And
I think it says, isn't it, on the box? It says something like it does mention both. It says Apple made or manufactured in China, made in America, manufactured in China. And you think, so the brawn at the moment is coming from China, the brains is from America. But as we know, the Chinese have got amazing amount of sort of tech resources, the resources, and they're very clever, with their tech, and some of their sort of offerings has been trumping. They're now ahead. In the Far East especially, their tech and their smartphones are ahead of Apple's. They release stuff like Samsung's tech. I know it's not from China, but Samsung's tech there is better than things. Huawei's come up with stuff that's impressive. So it's only a matter of time. I just think almost China realises it's a matter of time before they become a dominant world player. And they don't want to sort of sign these sort of trade deals at the moment, because it'll stop that, and it'll prevent them from becoming that world power as quickly as they hope to be. Talk about risk. What's the risk? I mean, everyone's sort of pricing in this. The stock markets fell out of bed. What's happening? Why?
Well, volatility did rise, as you say, it sounds like a lot, but of course, you have to remember it's come off a very low base. Yeah. One interesting fact that came to light this week was that hedge funds and other large speculators are the shortest they've ever been of volatility, i.e. VIX index futures. This is they're at their most extreme short position since records began 15 years ago in 2004. So, and the reason that that's the situation is that people have been making money by selling volatility while equity markets have been rising. Of course, if we do see a more concerted sell-off from equity markets around the globe, then that situation could come back to bite them on the behind, if I can put it like that, because, of course, volatility would then rise further. There might then be some short covering in the short volatility position, which would be self-feeding. And to think, we've only seen a small fall in US markets thus far, given that they were on, their record, just finished the record quarter ever for those indices. It's interesting to take a look at China and see how things can turn around quite quickly, as they have done there. And I understand that the Shanghai Composite Index, for instance, is down 11% in 10 days. Wow. So that's a more meaningful pullback, isn't it? I know the Chinese markets finished back in the this morning, but nonetheless it shows you how sensitive some other markets are. Yeah. I think it's also notable that overnight we saw the yen creep up to trade below 110 against the US dollar, and the yen is often a barometer for risk off in the markets. If the yen's appreciating, there's a fair chance that some portion of the market is feeling more risk off. And of course, we can't discount geopolitical risk again. We obviously know that relations between the US and North Korea have gone cold once again. But now it seems like Iran might be upping the ante once more. They've suggested that they might withdraw from some of the aspects of the 2015 nuclear non-proliferation deal. They've gone so far as to suggest that they might start enriching uranium once more. And the Americans have moved more military forces into the Persian Gulf or towards the Persian Gulf as a result. So, I'm not suggesting again that we'll see a shooting match in the Persian Gulf, but it all helps to crank up, tension and potentially put additional risk on the table. One thing, of course, any further tension in the Middle East might lead to would be a further hike in the price of oil, which, to be honest, this morning we haven't seen that, but if things do become increasingly tense, we could well do. Of course, that again feeds back into the global trade argument. Higher oil prices not necessarily that good for global trade and the global economy. So we've got a series of potential vicious circles, really, that could become self-feeding if all the elements fall into line. It's interesting to remember that Bank of America said that markets would be much more sensitive to macro factors in 2019. And I think we are starting to see that play out. We haven't had the big move yet. If the trade talks, for instance, between China and the US definitively failed this week in Washington, then that might be a catalyst. Or if they, if the can gets so kicked so far down the road that President Trump, unilaterally acts again to impose further tariffs to the ones he's already talked about, basically put tariffs on every single set of Chinese goods, then that could be a catalyst too. So we're teetering on the edge of a cliff, if you ask me. We're not necessarily going to jump off of it, but it's best to be aware that there are a number of factors that could take us that way.
Is it a cliff, or is it a gentle hill that goes back up?
A cliff might be, I suppose I'm using Brexit terminology, a cliff might be too strong a word. Maybe it's a sharp decline. Yeah. Would it be a bad thing anyway if we saw a few, percentage points, half a dozen percentage points knocked off of US equities? Probably not.
No, we need every now and again, we do need that steam let off, that correction, just to keep the, if that keeps happening, once, twice a year, a bit of a correction, or, then it can carry on, because it takes the steam out of it. When you get stocks that are overvalued, that's the problem, isn't it? And when you get it keeps going up, and then the Fed raises rates because everything's going well. But when you have a pullback, that's good. It brings those valuations back in line a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You want some more rational thinking rather than people blindly pumping money into a market that might already be at its peaks. Yeah. So a pullback might well be healthy. One thing to look out for, I think your listeners might be interested in, is that Uber, the controversial ride-hailing firm, is IPOing tomorrow. Yeah. And I just wonder if that could be an interesting barometer of market sentiment. It's the archetypal new economy company, isn't it? It's massive size, but really, well, according to it anyway, it doesn't really employ anybody. And it's very much focused on the world of tomorrow with autonomous driven vehicles in mind and trying to hack away at the ownership of individual vehicles, etc., etc. It's been hyped to death, hasn't it, over the last few years? Can it make a success of its IPO tomorrow, or will market sentiment turn against it? Lyft, its biggest rival, IPO'd a couple of weeks ago. They did well on day one, but the price subsequently drifted away. And I think I'm right in saying, as of yesterday, they were 11% below their IPO price. So it will be very interesting to compare the performance of Uber with the performance of Lyft.
Yeah, but there's a big difference. I'm not saying the big difference, but there is a difference between Uber and Lyft. Well, I don't know what the valuation of Lyft was, but Lyft is very much that ride sharing app, and it's all about sharing rides and that stuff. But Uber is similar, but it's also, I think, invests a lot more in futurology, doesn't it? I mean, I know Lyft is doing a bit of that with Waymo and all that stuff, but I mean, Uber itself has got its own self-driving cars, and they're testing that, and so they are more future. So I know their valuation is, they reckon, was, so they reportedly target a range of $48 to $55, which would value the firm at $100 billion I don't know what Lyft was. I think Lyft was not as much as that, was it?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't as large as that. No, I mean, you are right, Justin. You do need to draw a distinction. They are investing in the technology. And in that way, I suppose they're a bit, they're similar to a company like Amazon, who's ploughing back money they make into the business to try and shape the future of the business. But I just wonder
$15 billion at Lyft. That's a lot less.
Much smaller. And of course, Lyft is purely focused on the US, whereas Uber, is already based overseas and has ambitions to grow further internationally. So they are separate companies, but I think Uber will be a very interesting barometer of sentiment, as I say, for investors, whether they are happy to continue putting money into these growth companies that may not necessarily make a profit very quickly, where they're just relying on capital growth and momentum to drive gains for investors, or whether people will say, well, perhaps this is, enough is enough, and this is looking fairly fully priced as it comes to the market. But we'll know more tomorrow afternoon, of course.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I think Uber will may do a bit better than Lyft, because I just think Uber is a more well-known brand. It's got that sort of first mover advantage air to it, and it's a lot more about future. So I think, whereas I only know Lyft because, I mean, the stock market is that. I've heard it mentioned a couple of times on CNBC, but I wasn't really aware of Lyft before that. But Uber, I've used Uber several times. I've never even heard of Lyft, pretty much. So I think it'd be interesting to see where it goes. And it's funny how, like I said, a lot of their drivers are on strike today because of paying conditions. Because, of course, they don't own anything. A very clever economy like Airbnb, which leverage assets that they don't own, they say. It's very clever, really, isn't it?
And it is. It's quite controversial. Some people think it's brilliant new age thinking. Other people think it's not so good and is bad for the average person and their non-employees. And that's an area, of course, that probably some investors will be concerned about, because they've been continuously subject to litigation in disputes around the rights of employees or non-employees, their drivers, let's call them that. And I think probably one thing that would benefit Uber is if it could put that controversy to bed finally and agree on how those people are treated, whether they are in effect employees or whether they are self-employed people just utilising their app.
I know it is bad, isn't it? I mean, because let me just be honest, it's a successful, business. It's very disruptive. But there's no reason why you have to tread on the ordinary man or woman just to get there. You can provide decent, sense of living and pay and all that stuff. And I don't see why the two should, tangle. They could exist on their own. You can give, and let's be honest, drivers are not the highest paid people in the world. You can give them a decent living,
They can. I think what happens, Justin, is that the need to disrupt and the sort of company ethos to do that gets in the way, and sometimes they overlook what the actual net effects to that will be on the people that are taking advantage of their very clever technology offerings. Anyway, all that will be distilled into the IPO, and the net result of what everyone's thinking will determine the flotation price, won't it, and how well they do.
Marvellous stuff. We'll see. I wouldn't be buying it, but there we are. I'll be interested to see the money going into it. Marvellous stuff. Anything else, Dad?
No, not really. I think it's all eyes on those things. South Africa's goes to the polls today. There's a general election there. That could be interesting. I don't think there's much doubt the ANC will be returned to government, but it depends, how well the opposition companies do. And, of course, that might have some knock-on effects to some of the mining stocks, so that could be worth keeping an eye on over the next 24 hours. I don't know if there's any guide, but the Rand was strengthening first thing this morning against the euro. The other thing against the dollar, rather, probably end of the euro as well. But the other thing to note, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand cut interest rates by 0.25% last night. There was expectation that the Australian Central Bank would have done something similar early in the week. They passed, possibly because Australia itself is having an election on May the 18th, but New Zealand pulled the trigger and actually hinted that there could be more cuts to come by early 2020. It's interesting to note as well that the bank has now got a seven member monetary policy committee, very similar to the one that we employ in the UK, and that the the statement that they issued post the meeting was much more dovish on interest rates than the stuff that's come out before from there. So a change of basis perhaps around interest rates in New Zealand. I think I said earlier that there was a new sheriff in town for monetary policy there. But of course, New Zealand is a massive exporter and relies very much on overseas trade, both in commodities and in things like tourism. And what happens in the US-China trade talks will feed directly back into their economy and ultimately into their monetary policy. So all roads seem to be leading to Rome, or in this case to Washington, and to those US-China trade talks.
Marvellous stuff. Cheers, Daz, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Thank you, Justin. Take care. Have a good week.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies. Wow. That shook me. That was thunder outside. I'll carry on. I'll leave that in. It's nice, you know, atmospheric sort of feeling there. It's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Alexander Mining, that's AXM, up 21.7%. At four, EQT, Ektek, PLC, up 50%. Wow. These two companies obviously really rallying strongly. At three, Highlands Natural Resources, HNR, up 9.7%. At two, Gfinity, of course, in the world of gaming, esports specifically, on their GFIN, up 9%. And number one most followed company is from Bidstack Group, BIDS. James came on the podcast with Fran, the CEO and CTO yesterday, of course. And they're very confident, I think, of hitting their end-of-year target. But that's not the thing here. It's land grab in this massive exploding world of gaming and advertising. And there's something, no bones about it. Some of the biggest companies in the world do advertising. Google, revenue comes from advertising. Facebook, advertising. Advertising is massive, you know? And outside those two, there's massive opportunity. And people are starting to see now that the gaming market, so big, bigger than movies and music put together, the most influential thing in the UK amongst teenagers, that's including all the apps, and yet it's underserved by adverts and exposure. So there's heck of a lot of potential there. And the guys mentioned that's not the only thing they're doing. Native in-game advertising is not the only thing they're doing. There's other things going on. The money they raised will help them accelerate this growth and grab more opportunities. And, of course, they're building a good team around them. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Oh, it's not what I'm talking about. I was getting carried away there. Let's go to the top five. Most liked RNS is at five, Sirius Minerals, notification of major holdings. At four, Big Dish, operational update. I chatted to Aidan, of course, about that. At three, by the way, you can see a video with Aidan on the front page of voxmarkets.co.uk. Zach chats him in video. At three, Cora Gold, Sanancora Gold Discovery Update. At two, Arc Minerals, Directors of Dealing. And number one is Sound Energy, operational update, Eastern Morocco. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.